This weekend starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Hackers want your cars. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Cyber crooks halfway around the world would love to remotely take control of your vehicle. How realistic is the scenario?
On the tech front, using artificial intelligence to improve the impeachment process.
As the Kansas City Chiefs attempt a return to the Super Bowl on Sunday, a look at the news headlines from the last time they were in it 50 years ago.
And trends to watch for 2020.
Americans and consumers actually around the globe are becoming far more comfortable with living life with robots, and they're changing their everyday habits to use them.
Ellen Byron at the Wall Street Journal on robots, mood enhancers, and scooters as the top consumer trends for this year. The threat of regular people having their vehicles carjacked by cyber attackers is real. Since cars have become heavily connected to the internet and are essentially computers on wheels, Phoebe Wall Howard, reporter at the Detroit Free Press, says computer hackers on the other side of the world could, while you're driving, crash your navigation system, do things like disrupt your steering, or perhaps remotely take control of the vehicle. Hackers do not need to be in close proximity. All they need, she says, is something as simple as internet connectivity. Phoebe, what are you hearing?
Well, this is something that the auto companies in Detroit and globally are on high alert, and that is because we know for a fact it is entirely possible for personal vehicles to be hacked, and that means your navigation system can get crashed. This is about cutting your brakes, disrupting your steering, remotely taking control of the entire vehicle. So this is not something out of Hollywood. Yeah. This is real life. Yeah.
Has it happened with malice so far that we know of?
Not yet, no, and we hope it does not go that far. But frankly, the sources I spoke to who are experts in cybersecurity, a top guy who handles all military jet security in Israel and works globally, said if people had any idea how serious this was, they may not sleep at night.
Yeah.
He said this is a real deal, and the vulnerability is there.
So clarify, cars, as you say, are basically computers on wheels. They're internet connected. Are they just Wi-Fi connected? They're not. They're fully internet connected. Right.
Everything. And even, yes, because you think of Tesla as a high-profile example, but really all the cars now, they can do updates. They can do, you do your software updates. When your light comes on for a car repair, sometimes that means just pressing a button and doing an over-the-air software update. That means the car is connected. And Tesla has taken great pride in updating your vehicle or doing a fix, from across the country. So the very same capabilities that create convenience also create this apprehension. And what's really kind of amazing is that the car companies, both in the United States and in Japan, China, France, Germany, Canada, they're all working together sharing the vulnerabilities, because they know that if they don't share, the good guys, the bad guys are sharing. So when someone sees a vulnerability, a company, they actually share it. There's a network, an official network for cybersecurity. And we're on high alert because, of course, the Department of Homeland Security issued a statement to companies all over the United States saying, in light of what's happening in Iran, business must be on high alert for cyber attacks in every capacity.
Speaking with Phoebe Wall Howard, automotive reporter at the Detroit Free Press, part of the USA Today network. Her piece is called Hackers on the Other Side of the World Can Take Control of Your Vehicle. That makes me long for my 1977 Ford Granada that I had in high school. But that I mean, what can we do though to that point? I mean, is there anything we can do as consumers? Is there an off button? Like, don't connect me anymore to the outside world? What do you do?
No, you don't. You just, it's like a hope and a prayer. But basically, the other very important thing, this sounds silly, but it's true, but I've had, you know, the cybersecurity folks who've worked for the FBI as well as military security say, you know, watch what you do with your key fobs. That is very serious. You know, they ask people to wrap them in a Faraday cage, in a piece of aluminum foil, throw them in a coffee can when you get home. But this is something very, very simple. But you've had situations where people can go by your house. They can, you know, basically hack the fob and get into your car. There have been many cases where people have done that at shopping malls. And they can basically go into your vehicle and then lock it back up again. So they can take things out and then close it back up again as if it was never disturbed. So these are things, just always paying attention. There's always risk. The former FBI agent said to me, if you have your house hooked up to, you know, if you have a smart house and Alexa and you use all these things, she said, everyone has to understand their risk. We all have a certain threshold. Yeah. But the more you connect, the more vulnerable you are. And that's what we're monitoring.
It seems like just a never-ending race versus the cyber crooks, right, who work 24/7 to crack your information or data, whatever.
Well, and also as data becomes more and more important, like I said, the car companies, I mean, they have hundreds and hundreds of people working on cybersecurity. I mean, people think of car companies as just the manufacturing, mm-hmm. attach the steering wheel to the vehicle. No, you have an entire cybersecurity network at each car company globally.
Thanks, Phoebe. Phoebe Wall-Howard, reporter covering autos at the Detroit Free Press. 12 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. SimpliSafe Home Security is like getting commercial-grade security, but for your own home. This is exactly the kind of security you get with SimpliSafe. If there's a break-in, SimpliSafe uses real video evidence to give police an eyewitness account of the crime. And that means police dispatch up to 350% faster than for a normal burglar alarm. Outdoor cameras and doorbells alert you to anyone approaching your home. Entry, motion, and glass break sensors guard the inside. Plus, SimpliSafe protects your home from fires, water damage, and carbon monoxide poisoning. It's all monitored 24/7 by live security professionals. You can set up your system yourself with no tools needed, or SimpliSafe's experts can do it for you. And it's only 50 cents a day with no contracts. Go to simplisafe.com/Gordon today to get free shipping on your order, plus a 60-day money-back guarantee. That's simplisafe.com/Gordon. To save on home security today. SimpliSafe.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us. Could artificial intelligence help the impeachment process be less biased? First, identification is what AIs increasingly do well. Most everything a president does is documented. The AI, using machine learning, would be trained to look for bad behavior. If it hears something that crosses the line, it first alerts the president and his core advisors. In short, the AI's first and foremost job is to function as a training tool for the president and immediate staff. But tech analyst Rob Enderle of the Enderle Group says if enough evidence of bad behavior is collected, the AI issues a recommendation, which may include additional training, censure, or even removal from office, depending on the problem and frequency. Rob, how do you see it?
So first, we look at the impeachment process and recognize that we've had 45 presidents, none of which were trained to be presidents. The best were probably the governors that became presidents or the vice presidents became presidents, and those had both mixed results. So you'd figure probably 15 of the 45 at least would have been fired for cause, because, you know, if you took a bunch of untrained people and made them CEOs, chances are a large percentage of them would fail. In fact, I would argue that in that case, probably about 90% of them would fail. Yet we've had three impeachments. So far, it looks like the third one's going to fail to remove President Trump from office, and the other two failed to remove presidents from office as well, which suggests that against a 90% probability of removal or a modest 25% probability of removal, we've had no removals over the entire 200-year-plus history of the United States. So it would suggest that our ability to remove an underperforming president needs work.
I'm thinking, too, although Nixon wasn't technically impeached, I mean, three of the last nine presidents have gone through this, so you get the sense that maybe there's more partisanship and maybe artificial intelligence could help that.
That's what I'm saying. You could certainly take an AI and replace the House's role to as prosecutor. So we look at the current impeachment process, the House plays prosecutor, and I got a kick out of the arguments that the House was being unfair, but really a prosecutor focuses on the prosecution. So inherently it tends to be one-sided. The Senate is supposed to be the court. Here the jurists are supposed to be impartial, and as we've seen with this most recent impeachment, anything but. The Republican Senate has rendered a decision of innocent before they've even heard the case. And can you imagine any type of a legal case where the jury says before the trial even starts, yeah, the guy's innocent? I mean, every one of the jurors would be replaced. Same thing if they were to say they're guilty. It has nothing to do with guilt or innocence. It has to do with the fact that they're supposed to enter the process with an open mind, and that appears to be impossible. So we've got a system that is fundamentally broken. It cannot function. The only way you could impeach a president would be if both houses were predominantly of the other party, and then the chances are they're impeaching them because the president's of the other party, not because they did anything wrong. So it's designed not to work. And so the one impartial body in the government, which would be the Supreme Court, plays a very light role in this process. And what I'm suggesting is we use AI and the judiciary, the Supreme Court, to change the impeachment process so that the AI reflects the need to impeach, so it's impartial. And then once it does, the judiciary takes over the process, and then they handle the overall trial.
Hmm. We're speaking with Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. He's written a piece about using technology to fix the impeachment process. But even using artificial intelligence in something like this can't be completely bias-free, right? Because you need programmers. You got to teach it what to read and think.
I'm not suggesting that the AI actually remove the president from office. I'm suggesting what the AI do is flag a set of instances as impeachable, and then it's handed over to the judiciary, which are people, and they use their own investigative capabilities, and capabilities they don't have right at the moment. I'm suggesting that we form an organization of investigators that then take over this process, confirm that the president should be impeached, and then the judiciary handle the trial with impartial, if you're going to have a jury, with an impartial jury, or they just handle it within their panel of justices, much like an appellate court does, where an appellate court doesn't really get a jury. The appellate judges decide the process. But the judiciary is as independent as we get in government, and they play the lightest role. Now I'm suggesting they play a much heavier role, and rather than having Congress be the ones that accuse, have a computer system accuse, so at least it carries the impression of impartiality.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. It's 21 minutes after the hour on This Weekend.
Now that Human Resources Director Fernando Pino has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, he's completely crushing it. He even has his own hype song.
Supporting our entire workforce. Everyone has different hours, skill sets, and pay grades. Motivating and engaging our people every step of the way.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger. I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the
top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top. Thanks for being with us. What are the biggest consumer trends set to shape 2020? Technology will drive many of the changes, for one. More from This Weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
Robots, mood enhancers, and scooters. Those are just a few of the top consumer trends for 2020. Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal is here to give us the lowdown on those and more predictions for the year. Ellen, let's talk about robots. What's new there?
Well, Americans And consumers actually around the globe are becoming far more comfortable with living life with robots, and they're changing their everyday habits to use them. Think about how much more comfortable we are using voice commands than we used to be. So there's still not, of course, complete trust of this technology, but we are slowly embracing the concept of AI-driven robots, as well as just smart technology-enabled appliances in our day-to-day lives.
Ellen, one of the predictions is that we will stay home more and be more comfortable at home. What are we doing at home?
Well, here's what's really changed about wanting to stay at home. It's not unusual that during times of economic, political, or personal uncertainty, people want to stay at home. The difference today is that high-speed internet access and better at-home services, as well as faster delivery times, means that a lot of consumers actually can stay home and never leave. There's so much more that you can do inside your home, particularly work from home, but you can work out at home, you can get everything from Q-tips to food delivered at home, and so Euromonitor expects more and more people will be homebodies and want to retreat inside their home in the year to come.
We're speaking with Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal. On the flip side of that, Ellen, when we do go out, we want to make it as convenient as possible.
Yes. There's also a prediction that consumers will start to become far more vocal about better transportation options. So as the world's population becomes increasingly urban, residents around the world are growing more frustrated with congested roads and overcrowded public transportation. And so there's a mounting expectation that apps should be able to tell you the best way to get from point A to point B, or the best combination of travel modes to get from point A to point B in the fastest amount of time possible. So we're going to see far more options in the year ahead to really get around, whether that be by taxi, an electric bike, a scooter, even a helicopter, or some customized combination of all of them.
Ellen, talk about instant gratification.
Well, as access to high-speed internet service becomes more widespread, consumers expect to take in far more information. And so companies need to realize that our attention spans are far shorter than they used to be, according to Euromonitor. And so more brands are experimenting with things like drops, which is the practice of selling exclusive merchandise for a short period of time. And they're also increasing the availability of faster video playback speeds so that people can take in more online content in less time. And so when someone is looking online on their mobile device, let's say, they expect to find what they want immediately. Also, because of this faster and access to far more information, friends, family, and independent consumers are quickly becoming the most trusted sources for information because consumers want to quickly decipher what's the most relevant information amid all of this bombardment of options that they can now access.
This weekend's Jennifer Koshenko with Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Byron. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. It's a new year, the perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. ZipRecruiter is so effective, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Again, ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Coming up this half hour, how to spark your career. Also, savers trying to lighten up in retirement. Plus, the box of cords you'll never, ever use again. And how the world has changed since the last time the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. A new survey by Deloitte has found that millennials are experiencing a high rate of job dissatisfaction, with 49% saying they would quit in the next 2 years. What's going on, and how can that dissatisfaction be addressed and perhaps reversed? We're joined now by Marina Shakur Haber, author of the online course called Your GPS to Success, How to Navigate the Life of Your Dreams. Marina, what's up with the millennials?
Well, millennials have really a huge burden. They have loans, their student loans that are incredible. Job prospects are, there may be a lot of jobs, but they're not going anywhere, and they're not paying very much, and then comes the high cost of living. And with all of those burdens put onto young people, there is a sense of incredible overwhelm, which really leads to confusion, loss of clarity, and a loss of hope. If you have no vision and no hope, then you're filled with pain and you numb it.
So when we talk about close to one in every two millennials being dissatisfied on the job, is this more likely a dissatisfaction with life in general that has trickled into the job?
I think it's all of the above. It's always a combination of elements. It's not one thing only. But it's certainly a sense of negativity out in the world, in our society. It's the jobs that go nowhere. And as I said, life has become more difficult, not less difficult. There is also a far greater sense of isolation that young people experience. The thing that was supposed to make them more connected has disconnected them. So it's really a great sense of almost despair.
How do you change that if you feel that mindset?
I have chosen to write a book, Dream a Better Dream, as an antidote to the negativity of our society. I have consciously chosen, instead of being part of this darkness and being sucked up into this negative vortex, that I'd rather be the light in darkness. The one light can brighten up an entire room, while one light that blew out cannot darken your room. So, on that note, it's a conscious decision for me. I do daily meditations, positive affirmation, positive visualizations, and work on my mindset every day to uplift myself.
Thanks, Marina. That is Marina Shakur Haber. Again, her online course is called Your GPS to Success, How to Navigate the Life of Your Dreams. It's 22 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Have you been a diligent saver during your working years? Upon retirement, you'll likely find it tough to transform yourself into a happy spender. This is not a problem you'll read much about because it isn't exactly a widespread affliction. Insight now from personal finance expert Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. Jonathan, explain.
Well, if you think about the typical person who's really good at saving for retirement, the person there who's often like the millionaire next door, the person who quietly accumulates a huge portfolio by living frugally, reaching retirement and saying, okay, I'm no longer going to save, I'm going to become a spender and spend down this huge nest egg that I've accumulated, that for a lot of people can be a deeply uncomfortable experience. Essentially, you're saying to yourself, do it the exact opposite of what you've been doing for the past four decades, and a lot of people simply can't bring themselves to do it. These are retirees who just won't spend money on themselves, even though they have these great big nest eggs.
Yeah. So how do you square that? You know, once that Monday comes and you're not showing up on the job and collecting that paycheck, how are you supposed to piece that together in your mind?
Well, I think the first thing to do is say to yourself, there is no virtue in just going out and spending money because you have it. If you find it deeply uncomfortable to spend great gobs of money, don't do it. If you're much happier having the money and having the sense of financial security that comes with it, there is nothing wrong with that choice. I mean, the only thing I say in this particular article is if you're not spending out of fear, if there's some sort of psychological crutch there that's stopping you from spending, that's a different issue. But it's simply that, you know, you like to have the money and you don't want to spend it. I think that's a fine choice.
You said you can obviously but get more enjoyment out of spending on others. Try it that way.
Yeah, that's a strategy that I think could work for a lot of people. You know, if you're reluctant to spend money on yourself, how about spending it on your family or on your friends? You know, pick up the tab when you go out to dinner. Pay for the family reunion. Pay for everybody to go on vacation. And don't forget about charities as well. If you're charitably inclined, you know, use your money to help the causes that really matter to you. One of the things the research shows us is that spending money on others tends to deliver more happiness than spending it on ourselves. So if you make this choice to spend on your family, on your friends, or to give to charity, you may actually be happier than those people who are spending the money on themselves.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com, and he's written a piece entitled Opening the Spigot. And it's about how retirees can suddenly be leery of spending money in retirement when all they've done is save during their working years. What else do you recommend here?
Well, if you're not going to spend the money yourself and you are going to leave it to the kids or you're going to leave it to charity, you better make sure that these people and these organizations are prepared for the money you're going to give them. So let's say there's a couple of charities that you really care about. You know, start tracking them for a while. You know, make a donation, see how they communicate with you, you know, read their regular reports to contributors. Get some sense for whether this is really a charity that you want to leave your wealth to. You know, one of the key metrics that I would look at is how much of the money they raise do they end up spending on further fundraising and on administrative costs. Best-run charities tend to only spend 10% of their total donations on administration and on fundraising. That means the other 90% are actually going to help the people these charities are looking to support. With your kids, if you're not sure whether they're going to be financially responsible with your money, try them out. You can use the annual gift tax exclusion to give each of your kids up to $15,000. So do that. Give them the $15,000 or whatever you feel you can afford and see what they do with the money. Do they go out and they buy the luxury car, or do they actually pay down debt or put it into a retirement account or pay for their kids' college education?
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, personal finance expert, also founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. 15 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business, but you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for being with us. For as long as consumer electronics have existed, people have had a hard time ditching the old cords to expired and outdated devices. The TV sets, computers, printers, camcorders, VCRs, DVD players, mini disc players, right? Blackberries and iPods that the cords belong to may not even be in our possession anymore. But the cords survive, squirreled away in drawers and bags and boxes. They might be useful someday, we tell ourselves. Even if some cords' purposes are lost to history. It's a story by Katie Bindley, technology reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Katie, set this up.
I interviewed a bunch of people who all seem to have one thing in common, which is at some point in their lives, they have had a box or a bag or a basket of random cords. And this seems to be, you know, I don't want to go so far as to say universal, but I've been kind of hard-pressed to find anyone who doesn't have some sort of small collection of cords that goes to either, you know, devices that they don't use anymore or that connects different things or that powers different things. And even, you know, some people might have gotten rid of it at some point, but there seems to be something about cords that we just don't want to get rid of them.
I have a bag of these things, and for whatever reason, it's like the 6-foot coax cable that I test, the router with on occasion, or test cable connectivity. I think that's the only one out of the 15 I ever use, and I have no idea what the other ones are, but I'm afraid to get rid of them.
Yeah, that was sort of a common theme that came up as I was talking to people. People, you know, even if they couldn't identify what a specific cord was for, they still felt like it would be a bad idea to throw it out. So they kind of kept it. It sounded like largely fear-based. And then there is sort of something else that kind of came up a bunch while I was talking with people and while I was sort of monitoring Twitter chatter about cords, is that once you do throw out a box of cords, you're almost guaranteed to need one of those cords within a relatively short time frame. So one woman I interviewed, she and her husband had, you know, gotten rid of all the cord box and didn't really think much of it. And then sure enough, not that long after, they realized that they had thrown out their printer cord, so they can no longer print things at home. So that's sort of, we've been calling it like a Murphy's Law of cord hoarding, that if you get rid of one, just watch, because you're gonna need it soon. And I saw a lot of people who were tweeting the story saying stuff like, oh, I just got, you know, I got rid of mine, and, you know, within X amount of time, I realized I needed one of them.
That's funny. We're speaking with Katie Bindley, personal technology reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called Admit It. You have a box of cords you'll never, ever use again. So you mentioned before we started chatting here, kind of on the record, that Twitter, as you referenced before, has kind of been this big unifier. Like everybody, regardless of political backgrounds, it seems, or sports teams that you support, everybody's got this box.
Well, what I noticed was, you know, oftentimes you can write like a fairly innocuous story that you don't think is going to be remotely controversial, and people sometimes still kind of find a way to either say something mean about it or to fight with one or another about it. And this story, out of pretty much any story I've ever written, it just struck me how sort of good-natured and funny everyone was about it. Although, you know, I just kept seeing people tweeting about it or replying to my tweet with, you know, hilarious stories about their cords, or even just like 2-line tweets about how they can relate to this. And it struck me that there was, it just kind of seemed to put everybody in a good place, I guess.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Bindley, technology reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Don't forget, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. And you can follow me directly on Twitter as well at Gordon Deal. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. It's been 50 years since the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl. I'm a Jets fan, right, so I can relate and sympathize. They beat the Vikings in New Orleans that year, 23-7, in Super Bowl IV. So what were things like 50 years ago? We took a look at thepeoplehistory.com and popculture.us to find out what was trending news-wise back in 1970. The U.S. lowered the voting age to 18 that year. 100,000 people estimated to have demonstrated in Washington, D.C. against the Vietnam War. On a related note, President Nixon that year ordered a secret invasion of Cambodia by U.S. and South Vietnamese troops. There was also the first Earth Day in 1970. Financially, the Dow Jones Industrial Average finished the year at 838. Average cost of a new house, about $23,000. Average income per year, $9,400. The average monthly rent was about $140, and the cost of a gallon of gas, 36 cents. 1970 was also the year the Concorde made its first supersonic flight. Other sports champions from that year, the New York Knicks, the Boston Bruins, the Baltimore Orioles. In music, the top song was Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel, but the music world was dominated by Paul McCartney's announcement that the Beatles had broken up. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.